the Station of the Stars. RTI.
Have mercy, Mr. Attitude. Eric Wiltshire.
Welcome back to part two of Postcard from Poprad, boys and girls, on a wonderfully affable day. I cannot believe it. Write it down in your diaries. No one's having an argument. That can't last. Petrol and diesel prices review is launched by the OFT. Now, the OFT is the Office of Fair Trading, and we'll ask the consumer expert first. Has the Office of Fair Trading got any teeth, or is it gummy, Mark?
It's gummy. The entire British regulatory process, the OFT, the FSA, Consumer Direct, Consumer Focus, any of that stuff, they're all gummy. And, of course, they're all consigned to the scrap heap because by the beginning or the early part of next year, they will all be abolished as part of the government's spending cuts. And I think that we've noticed recently a bit more activity from the OFT and the FSA. The FSA, incidentally, could have prevented a lot of the economic crisis problems in the United Kingdom had they had the teeth to go and sort out the banks. But of course, in fact, Private Eye magazine calls the FSA the fundamentally supine authority. And we're noticing a little bit more activity from them because I think they're trying to go out leaving us all with a good feeling, but we will remember.
Or they're trying to get a job in the new authority.
Oh, they've got that already. They've got that already. The new authority, which is called the FCA, I don't speculate about the meaning of those initials, already, I think, has got most of the people or a lot of people in the FSA, including the senior execs, now just moving over to the FCA. I think it's a question about personal attitude. The FSA had all the powers they needed. They did nothing.
This is all very interesting, but I do think we're missing the point of this story.
I've missed the point completely because I've moved away from the
FSA. I think what you say is right, but...
Would you two stop loving each other this week?
I love him. He looks like Julian Assange. You. I love it. I think Julian Assange is so sexy. He should just have his voice box removed. But the fact is that we are investigating the price of petrol in Britain. And the whole thing seems to be focused on the price of oil. Mm-hmm. And not on the fact that the government is screwing us into the ground. I think the tax on petrol that the government takes is something like 65%.
Mm-hmm. It's always been very high.
Yeah, but that's what should be investigated, not the oil people. They should be investigated as well. But no matter how much the oil people drop the price of oil by, we don't drop the price of tax.
Well, it was funny because there was one guy on a news report saying, unless this gets sorted out, us independent petrol pump attendants are all going to go out of business.
We independent.
Yes, because they claim that they can't make a profit right now.
They can't make a profit out of petrol, no, because the tax is so high and people are using less.
Do you want prices to go down then, Lee?
Of course I want prices to go down. Do you really know what the price of a gallon of petrol is in Britain
in
now?
I disagree with you. I disagree with you. There we are.
Do you know what the price of petrol is?
Oh, right, okay, you've disagreed.
Do you know what the price of petrol is in Britain?
No.
Oh, nearly £7 a gallon now. And in some places, it's over £7 a
gallon. But Lee, you're missing the trick. If the tax is the tax, right, and we agree there's a huge chunk of tax, yeah?
Yeah, but...
Right, whoa. There's a huge chunk of tax, whatever you want to do. The retailer, he buys fuel. The duty is put onto it. He then tries to sell it to you, the customer. Yeah?
So the tax is... petrol's a lost leader now.
But not to these guys, the independent petrol pump people.
Of course it is. They've got the petrol stations like video shops. They sell everything. It's like a supermarket. Petrol is a loss leader to bring people in to buy other things.
But he was complaining that the petrol's too cheap because...
And he's an idiot.
Well, he was the bloke speaking on behalf of the independents.
Well, he's still an idiot because, the biggest business people in this country, in the UK, the best business people, and I mean that really truthfully, the best business people in Britain today are Asians. And Asians are taking over all the petrol stations because they can see the value in the supermarket aspects of it and the ancillary sales that they can pick up by using petrol as a loss leader.
Okay.
And so he is talking rubbish.
I think that petrol should be as expensive as possible to discourage as many motorists as possible from going on the roads, so that they use more public transport. And this particularly will in fact does apply to cities. That should come down. There should be much more investment in it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with him more.
I think that it's important for the public. I thought you wanted to disagree with me. you told me that you wanted petrol to go down. I've said that you're wrong and I want it to go up. Now, can't we have an argument about this?
That bit, what I'm agreeing with is that public transport should be made accessible to everybody.
He's on drugs this week.
But there ought to be more demand for it.
Well, actually, I can tell you a very simple way to save yourself a lot of money on petrol. Really, genuinely, no joke. I had a computer analysis of my car, and by doing so and doing some tweaks on it, I've actually cut my fuel consumption by 30%.
I can imagine that. Here's a good point for you.
Develop that, Lee. Think about how many people have their engine checked
for fuel consumption.
And if you can bring that down by 30%, and funnily enough, Petra had the same test done, and she's finding exactly the same results.
Tell her to stop drinking petrol.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, let me just add to this. I live in a city, okay? I live in Paris, but if I'm in England, I live in London. I'm afraid I do. And a few years ago, I stopped owning a car. I've owned cars all my life, and sometimes I've had several cars. Mm. And I've been very fond of cars and what have you, and I've let them all go now. And now, when we need a car, we rent. Mm. And I can tell you that we rent a car probably something like 8 weeks for a year. Mm. It's always taxed. It's always insured. It's always clean. I never bother to clean them. They're always repaired. They're always everything. They're always in perfect condition. Mm-hmm. And then I just hand them back and forget it. And I don't know why I ever owned a car in a city before. And I can see that people in the countryside and so forth need cars very, very badly.
I live in the countryside.
I live in the village of the damned, and we get one bus a week.
Well, that's the problem, okay? But a huge number of people live in cities and destroy their cities with the on-street parking, the pollution, the accidents, the roadblocks and everything. I think the congestion area was the most fantastic thing that happened in London. I'm so sorry that Boris Johnson stopped it being enlarged. And I would say that there ought to be war on motorists who live in cities and own cars in the cities.
All hate mail goes to Mark Gander. Let's move on, boys, because we've got lots to get through.
Can I just make a point on this very quickly?
Sure.
Because we were talking earlier about alcohol and old people, right? And the price of alcohol actually is incredible. If you think you buy a gallon of petrol, right, for whatever it is, £7.
Sure.
You buy a gallon of beer, it's going to cost you nearly 20 or over.
Yeah, never thought of that.
Mm.
Mm. Are we hoarding North Sea oil?
Well, I think we've been... The thing is that with North Sea oil, I've actually said this on the programme in the past, what's happened to North Sea oil? I can remember saying it a few months ago. What's happened to North Sea oil? And nothing's ever been said about North Sea oil for probably about a decade in Britain.
Mm.
And most people
it was supposed
in Britain,
to be the saviour of the UK, wasn't it?
It was. And most people
assumed... It probably done a lot of good.
Most people in Britain assumed that North Sea oil was now finished, but it wasn't. While all this tax was going on, the petrol and everything, and we were importing petrol and everything, importing oil, sorry, we were hoarding North Sea oil.
Right. So
it
what's
was
the
still
purpose?
There. Pardon? Yeah.
What's the point of hoarding it?
Well, because now we're in trouble, we can use it.
Oh, it's a false inflation of the price.
Absolutely. Did you see how I sidestepped that word then?
You did, didn't you? You did very well. You're a good boy.
But yeah, De Beers does exactly the same thing with diamonds and all the Arab oil producing states.
Yeah, but you can survive without diamonds.
Time.
You can't survive without oil.
I know, but the same thing has been done by the Organization of Oil Producing States.
Yeah.
OPEC, yeah.
Are we a member of that lot? I don't think we are.
I don't.
Very serious one here next, in that This is where the Barney's going to start. A Sun reporter named Harry Arnold.
Very good friend of mine. I used to
who was the reporter at the Hillsborough disaster in Liverpool when the stand broke and there were so many people tragically lost their lives. Mm. He's come out against the newspaper.
Against the Sun for what the Sun did. The Sun were pilloried.
Well, he's come out particularly against the editor, McKenzie. Retweaked and reworded and represented his article.
Yeah, and I admire Harry for doing that. In some ways, he's seen as a bit of a turncoat within the industry by saying this. But in fact, he isn't. What he's saying, which is what happened to every single reporter in the national newspaper world, mm-hmm. where they feel that their actual report on some event has been misrepresented by the headline that was used on it. Mm. Headlines are an art and are very difficult to write. And if you think Kelvin McKenzie was trying to capture the whole of the Hillsborough disaster in just two words, and he used the words "the truth." Mm-hmm. And what Harry's saying is that his piece was a speculative piece based on what he'd heard after the events of the tragedy, and he wrote quite rightly and quite properly the story that he'd picked up on the streets about the fact that it could have been to do with alcohol and fans being drunk and everything like that, and the police panicked and all sorts of things. But the Sun went ahead and printed that story as the truth.
Mm-hmm. And so wasn't it a case that Kelvin McKenzie was just doing the job that Mr. Murdoch wanted him to do?
In this case, Murdoch wouldn't have been involved in it. It would not be.
No, it's not being involved. But was he not just doing the job that he was employed to do?
He was doing absolutely. He was, and in fact, one way that he could have protected the paper and his own career, although his career didn't particularly suffer because of this, was to put a question mark at the end of that those two words. So it said the truth, and it was a question: is this the truth? Yeah. But he couldn't, because it's de rigueur within newspapers to use question marks on a story because it weakens the story, and that is the mistake that headline made. And people like Kelvin and other newspaper editors have to make a snap decision at that moment on what they're going to say, and they have to live with it. Kelvin McKenzie, unfortunately, had to live with this, and his newspaper suffered dramatically because of that headline.
Are you sure that the newspaper suffered?
Oh, yeah, it did, yeah. It lost the phenomenal sales and advertising from the north of England.
Oh, right. I didn't know that. Oh, well, there you go. Prince Harry has been deployed to Afghanistan for 4 months. Let's just tell the Taliban we're doing it. Marvellous. Unbelievable. The Prince Susan Apache helicopter pilot arrived in Camp Bastion this week, and he will take part in combat missions against the Taliban as well. Why the hell are they telling the opposition we're doing it?
Why did the Ministry of Defence tell us?
Well, that's what I just said.
Oh, I thought you were talking about newspapers. Sorry, I was being a bit petulant.
That you were, weren't you? Mark?
Yes. No, I agree. Why did they tell us? There is actually really no point to saying that he's out there. Because, like you say, he surely must put him in danger no matter what they say.
On, let's find out. Mark, would they do, if there was a similar scenario, and I know we chopped all the heads off in France of all the royalty, but would this kind of thing happen in France?
Well, the French control their press very, very tightly, and I think that there's generally speaking a trend for underreporting.
You're quiet, Mark, as well now.
I think that the press in France are very, very closely controlled. There's a real trend there here for underreporting. Things really don't get out. And in fact, I understand, for instance, that in the situation of this dreadful murder which has taken place in France, that a lot of the French media are looking to the English media to get the details for their stories. Wow. So that really shows you something.
There's one reason for that. One very simple reason for that. That's because we're better than them.
Yes, well, I think we are, but I don't think we're so controlled either. I mean, you know, the government has huge stakes. The government has huge, the French government has huge stakes in the way that in the French press and the way they run with tax benefits and cash handouts and all sorts of things. It's really quite extraordinary. But I mean, back to Prince Harry, I have to say that it does worry me. I suppose that maybe the news has been released because the last experience was that I think it was an American organization released the information, and I suppose they don't want to be embarrassed in the same way.
Mm. I think it's also a PR exercise on behalf it is, of the royal family.
They feel, I think, maybe more comfortable that he's in an Apache helicopter, which they reckon is pretty well impervious to attack.
Why has it got patches on it? Is it knackered?
Apache,
you fool.
They're
in very good condition.
Yes, but, exactly. Carrying on.
Let me just say that it does worry me. I wonder why it's being done at all. Okay, I mean, it's great for him, and maybe that's what he really wants. But I tell you what, if we end up seeing him on a video on Al Jazeera being decapitated, I think it will cause a lot of trouble, and I'm not sure that it's worth it.
Mm, okay. Staying with Prince Harry for a moment, the toothless PCC has said there'll be no inquiry into the son's photographs that they published of Prince Harry because the Press Complaints Commission hasn't got any. It's gummy. It's gummy.
It hasn't anything to do with that. They've realised that there was nothing for them to actually investigate. It was perfectly legitimate and right.
So it was never that. It was never legitimate. It was never right. And it was it was just satisfying prurient public interest.
I
wasn't seeing any old scandal, and of course the Sun stepped up to the mark as usual because it's the Sun.
Can I just, Lee, let's go back to the PCC a minute, because you will know more about this than Mark and I. Now, there were 3,800 complaints received by the PCC.
Yeah.
Is it a case that, say, if there was 2,000 complaints about somebody else's photo, the PCC would have voted in favour and done something about it? Or does it mean that you've got to get like 500,000 people before the PCC will get out of their chairs and do anything?
No, not at all. It's very simple. If there were 3,800 complaints about something that was, and the complaints were legitimate, and remember that the people who complain to the PCC don't really complain about the particular story. They just complain about the press. And it doesn't matter what the story is.
How do you know that for a fact?
Well, I don't think that's
the way the world is.
Well,
that's
this was an extraordinarily large number of people to complain. Mm. And so I don't think it's less than half a percent. Yes, but it was still, regardless of that, a quite a record number of complaints made about a single issue.
Okay,
I think it is, and now I've forgotten what I was going to say, but it was going to be a very good point.
Right, I'll change this round to another regulator now because, well, I apologise to other regulators in advance of this because I don't consider the PCC to be any form of regulator. Now, where it gets to from the sublime to the ridiculous, there was a complaint put in by a single individual about an adult channel broadcast in the UK because they showed naked breasts at 12 o'clock at night for longer than was allowed. Therefore, Ofcom had to rule in favour of the complainant. One person complained.
That just backs up my argument. If the complaint about Harry's pictures had been a reasonable complaint, then they would have reacted on one complaint. But the complaint about Harry's pictures is unfounded. The fact that the prince of this land chose to get naked in front of people he didn't know with a naked woman. And bear in mind, the latest story on this, which we haven't looked at, is that these people he was naked in front of with a naked woman, right, has just been arrested for fraud.
But,
That's the caliber of the people that he was involved with.
The PCC...
That's got nothing to do with the story.
No.
Of course, he's got everything
PCC,
to do with the story.
The PCC had warned that printing the photographs, although they were already on the internet, could breach the editor's code of practice on privacy grounds.
And well, there's the word could. It could do, but it didn't.
Because
they had to investigate it.
Yeah.
If they'd investigated, they might...
If they'd have asked the 3,000, if
they declined to investigate it,
yeah,
and that's the whole issue here. When you've got nearly 4,000 people who are making a complaint, I mean, you're the one who said, oh well, you know, it's in the public interest to have these pictures revealed. Well, 4,000 people managed to get out of their armchairs and felt so strongly about it to complain about this. It's a record amount, or pretty well a record amount of complaining. So therefore, these aren't people who just habitually complain about newspapers. These people who got up to complain about this particular issue, and that many people suggest very strongly that there is a public interest in that and having that complaint being investigated, and the PCC declined.
Lee?
If a judge, an English judge, was found naked or had his photographs taken naked in a hotel room with dozens of other people that he didn't know, and that would be a legitimate story. The emotionalism that's attached to this story is because it's Prince Harry, and there is nothing wrong with Harry.
But the PCC, Lee, did actually state that it would be inappropriate to open an inquiry because the Prince's representatives had not yet made a formal complaint.
Well, maybe they won't, because they don't want it to go on. And what they got was this PR exercise of sending him out to Afghanistan.
OK. There's a bit of a gaff at Nokia.
Oh, and
wow, yeah.
This is
just funny. Did you watch it?
I saw it. Oh, it's wonderful. In fact, you can see it.
Does it matter?
Yes, of course it
matters.
You've got Nokia that's floundering around. They've had to dump their absolute flagship Symbian operating system. They're trying to pick themselves up from the ground. They're run by a bunch of Finns who are so...
No, not anymore, Mark.
Well, Elop is a Finn, isn't he?
Well, they...
Every time I watch his look at his name, this is the CEO of Nokia, and I see Elop, I keep sort of thinking, how is it Elop or Flop? because I think that's where it's all going. And I think Nokia really needed to do this absolutely correctly. And what do you know? In case people don't know what the story is about, they provided a video showing their new super, super duper telephone with the new super duper duper camera, giving the impression that the video was taken by using one of these telephone cameras, but in fact, a reflection in a window in the background of the video showed, in fact, that there was, I think, a Nikon or something a bit flashy and far more expensive than Nokia that was actually taking the film. What a
load of pillocks for letting it go ahead.
Yes. Okay. This one I just love, because I confess to the fact I was a home brewing freak for many years. The White House has released details of one of the most closely guarded secrets on the planet. The recipe for President Barack Obama's home-brewed honey ale. What a star.
Why has it got that? Yeah. Well, I tell you, honey ale. Mr. Obama, grow some of those pillocks.
Eh?
Well, what sort of man drinks honey ale? He should be feeling bitter and mild.
I apologize unreservedly to everybody in Slovakia that knows you make alcohol from honey. That's
Do
what
really?
We yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Isn't that called mead?
No. Delicious. No, it's not called mead in Slovakia. It is similar to what we know as mead.
Yeah.
Mead's not made out of honey.
What's it made out of? What's mead made out of if it's not made out of honey?
I don't know.
Thank you. And also,
can you kiss me?
my honey, I've shrunk the beer was a funnier joke than that.
And we also have a wonderful sort of wine-like drink, which is also made from honey. And at Christmas time, they serve it to you hot when you go to some of the Christmas festivals.
Mm. Right.
And it's yummy stuff. It is really, really, it's really, really yummy. So
you drink it when you're over 65.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, one of the professors I know says he has a glass of it every morning. And he's a doctor as well. A bit serious, this one. The case in Pakistan of a young girl who's just been granted bail, a Christian girl, because apparently, or allegedly, she damaged some pages of the Quran.
Yes. I mean, she's burning it, and apparently that's an example of blasphemy. which has very, very, very severe, very stringent punishments, including possibly death in some circumstances. Well, I don't want to offend Islam, but I'm very sorry that they don't leave the business of condemnation and judgment and punishment to Allah. And I'm very sorry, really, that that the very honourable and very important religion of Islam, I'm very sorry that it's not more confident about these kind of things. And sorry, I've interrupted now the full story because it's a bit of a scandal.
Can I just say something that I think is fundamental to this story? Not fundamental to this story, but fundamental to the world. If you believe in your God, which many of us do, and it doesn't matter whether you're in America, whether you're in Slovakia, whether you're in Arabia, if it, no matter where you are in the world, there is one incredible thing that happened in so many thousands of years ago. And that is that inexplicably, the whole of the world, with no communication, no way of contacting each other, they didn't even know that other lands existed, all began to believe in one God. What they did, they named it differently and came up with a slightly different take on that God. We all basically believe in one God, and it's about time that people like this stopped messing about and making religion, people's religions, people's fundamental beliefs, something that can be made into wars and anything absolutely horrendous, and accept that actually the world is a place of worship.
Yes. Yeah, I kind of agree with that.
That's quite good.
Yes, actually, it's very profound as well, which is rather a shock from you. But equally, I'll add to that, if everybody believes in the one God, if eventually these people would go there, who you're chastising at the moment, therefore the actual final say will come from that God upstairs. And if it is that they deem it's wrong to do something or right to do something or you can be forgiven for it, then I would say, let's let the vote stay with the bloke upstairs.
I think that's it. I think we should all rest our case.
Exactly. David Cameron's in the news again this week because of the current change to construction planning laws in the UK. And apparently there was this young kid sort of looking up at Mr. Cameron with a sort of look of disbelief, not that he will know anything about what was going on. And he's been picked up by the press. And it's really interesting because at a time when I know for a fact there's a whole bunch of building people getting on with it and getting out there and actually turning a buck and getting the economy going, that anybody's got the audacity to complain about a government trying to do something to help them is beyond my belief.
Well, it isn't that, is it? And the nine-year-old kid was actually picked out as a picture because it was representative of the way the whole of Britain was looking askance at the Prime Minister when he decided that he wanted to get rid of planning laws which have protected the look of this septic aisle for so long that now anybody can build anything wherever they want, doesn't matter what it looks like.
Not exactly the case. Not exactly the case. It's a temporary, temporary reprise for 30-foot planning. And on that point, boys and girls, we've got to take our leave. That was Postcard from Pop Red for another week. And time to say goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
I'm going for a drink.
See you later. Bye.
This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world. The Station of the Stars.